Kip hung doggedly at Jaina's side, firing as constantly as his lasers would recycle. Jaina wasn't firing. Her mind was somewhere else, not even acknowledging the coral skippers as threats, only her reflexes keeping the skips off her. Then the answer came to Kip.
Jaina, I can save him, but I need your help.
How? She asked.
Aim straight in for the other interdictor's bow. Protect me. I'm going to be too busy to shoot.
Kip, the dark bomb thing can't work again. They'll be looking for it.
That's not what I'm going to do. You trust me?
Do it. They traded places then. Jaina suddenly opening up with her weapons, Kip handing the task of flying evasively over to his reflexes, while his mind went elsewhere. Luke Skywalker had done this once, a couple of years ago. He'd mentioned it to the other Jedi. No one else had tried it, because it had exhausted Luke to the point of collapse. They reached the edge of the coral skipper cloud around Jag. Jaina and Kip flashed by the skips that had turned against them, dodging their incoming fire, Jaina spraying return fire. Suddenly, the interdictor was before them. Absently, barely aiming, Kip squeezed the trigger of his lasers. His red beams flashed out against the interdictor, and a void moved in position to intercept the beams. Within the Force, he tried to feel the presence of that void. He couldn't feel the Yuuzhan Vong or their creatures, but he could feel distortions in space, hard little nuggets of wrongness where there should be nothing. He armed a proton torpedo and fired it. He felt its physical presence as, in a matter of seconds, it closed the distance between him and the interdictor and was swallowed by another void. And he seized upon that void, directing all his Force abilities and discipline against it. He had to find the right pressure to budget, to set it into motion and keep it going that way. For a moment, the only things in the universe were him, Jaina, and the void. He moved the void, turned it around, moved it back in the other direction. Then he was himself again, in the cockpit, watching the flank of the interdictor distort. The void had moved back and touched the interdictor, and now the interdictor elongated into it, extending what looked like a pliant extrusion of what he knew to be hardened Yorick coral into the singularity. And in a moment, the interdictor was gone. Kip glanced at his sensor display. He, Jaina, and Jag were outbound from the engagement zone. Maybe 20 coral skippers were in pursuit. But there were now other friendlies on the board. A cloud-tagged rogue squadron and a capital ship-sized blip tagged Lunar Tide.
Let's go that direction, Kip suggested.
We'll do that, Kip, Jaina said. Thank you.
Think nothing of it.
Jaina, Kip, and Jag were directed to land in the kill zone, an area where no other vehicles were situated. Colonel Selchu stood there alone. Her heart couldn't sink much. It was already somewhere around her ankles. But she felt it descend the final few centimeters to her toes. As the pilots emerged from their starfighters, Tycho looked between them. Anyone hurt? He asked. They all shook their heads. Kip, though undamaged, leaned heavily against the wing of his snub fighter, and Tycho gave him a second look. You, go lie down, he said. They walked into the biotics building. Kip managed not to stagger as he left them for his quarters. At Wedge's office, Tycho left Jaina and Jag to enter the inner office, then stuck his head out a moment later to say, It'll be about 5 minutes. Understood, Jaina said. When Tycho had withdrawn, Jag said, I need to talk to you, privately. There's a little conference room down the corridor. That'll do. She knew what he was going to say. His face would turn pale with his anger, highlighting the scar on his forehead, and he would cut her with his words. You abandoned your mission objectives for one pilot, he'd say. You almost wiped out the rest of your squadron. No one's life is worth that. You're a complete failure as a leader, as an officer. A sharp pain sprang up in her gut as though she'd inadvertently swallowed a vibroblade, but she held herself straight. They reached the conference room, its door open. Jag closed the door behind Jaina. She faced him, hoping that what she was feeling wasn't reflected in her expression. "I know what you're going to say," she told him. "I don't think you do." Oddly, his face was not the stern mask she'd expected. If anything, he looked uncertain, unlike the Jag fell she was used to. "We both know that your command decisions were far afield of common sense and effective strategy. We don't even have to discuss that. What I have to know..." He hesitated, and if anything, looked even less sure of himself than before. "What I have to know is this. Why did you do it?" "I don't know." "You do know. You have to know. Nobody else but you could know." He leaned in closer. It wasn't a posture of intimidation. He stared into her eyes as if he hoped to find an answer, any answer, written in tiny letters on her pupils. "Answer me."
I...
Her voice hoarsened until she was sure she could no longer use it, but finally words emerged, words that seemed to be coming from a child.
"Everyone is going away."
Tears blurred her vision.
"They keep going away, and I can't stop it. I didn't want you to go away."
Then the tears did come. She could no longer read his expression, but knew it had to be one of puzzlement or distaste or outright contempt. Then he took her by the shoulders and pulled her to him, drawing her head against his chest, resting his own head atop hers, an embrace that startled her so much that she should have jumped away. But she didn't. "I won't go anywhere," he said.
"Why?"
"Why what?"
"Why won't you go anywhere?"
"Because I don't want to." He tilted his head down and hers up, and suddenly she was kissing him, holding him tight enough to cause a vacuum weld. Her confusion didn't disappear, but it was joined by a soaring sensation, as though she'd just taken off and left her X-Wing behind. Moments later, Wedge and Tycho looked up as Jag entered and saluted. "I've known Jaina Solo since she was tiny," Wedge said. "You're not her." Jag kept his attention fixed on the wall over Wedge's head. "I came in her place, sir." "She asked you to do that?"
"No, sir. I told her to go get some rest, that I'd speak to you and get things sorted out."
"Do I need sorting out, Phil?"
"I believe so, sir, through no fault of your own. If I may answer a question with a question, how old were you before you first disagreed with a commanding officer, and later found out you were right?"
20, which is when I first had a commanding officer."
"I'm about the same age, sir, and I have something to recommend before you talk to Jaina Solo."
"Very well, at ease. Sit down. Let's hear what you had to say." Jag did as he was told and finally met his uncle's eyes.
"Sir, I think that disciplining her now would be like hitting a bar of metal when it's superheated."
"Meaning that you'll change its shape?"
"Yes, sir, and not for the better."
"What about her reliability in combat? She's not rational."
"Sir, I'd fly again with her tomorrow, and not out of gratitude. I think that what happened today was an anomaly. I don't think it'll happen again."
"Care to tell me why?"
"No, sir."
Wedge let a silence fall between them, let it stretch into long seconds. "You know, I would not, from a command point of view, be able to accommodate you on this. It's the sort of thing that undermines discipline. But we already have orders in place that demonstrate that Jaina receives special treatment. This is a more extreme variety of special treatment than I'd prefer to accord her, but there you are."
"Yes, sir."
"All right, then. I'll do as you recommend." Wedge leaned forward, his posture becoming more casual. "Let me take my rank insignia off for a second, Jag.
and say how glad I am that you made it today. Jag managed a smile.
Thank you, sir. Wedge.
Wedge heaved a sigh. Back to work for me, so I'll let you get back to your duties as well. Sir? All business again, Jag stood, saluted, and left. When the door closed behind him, Tycho said, That was interesting. He deliberately countermanded one of my orders, Wedge said. He was furtive. Wedge nodded. Sneaky, even. We'll make a rebellion-style pilot of him yet. In the operations chamber of the Yuuzhan Vong worldship, surrounded by analysts and advisors, Sabang La sat at the center of things and listened to reports.
It is a super weapon,
Ma La said, using the basic word rather than the Yuuzhan Vong equivalent.
They have a history of creating devices that can smash entire worlds, and this is a new one.
It's Danny Kui's doing,
Vicky said.
It has to be. She's the only one who could integrate Yuuzhan Vong and New Republic technology this way. I'm going to make that idiot Tam suffer for not killing her. He must have had some chance to do so by now.
Savang La raised a finger.
First, the works of the Yuuzhan Vong are not technology. They must never be referred to as such. Second, our works could not be melded with infidel technology. The gods would never allow it.
Vicky and Ma La exchanged glances, and it was Ma La who dared to correct the War Master.
This turns out not to be correct. It has already been done. Anakin Solo reconstructed his lightsaber with a lambent crystal, and it appears that he passed knowledge of this technique to others before he was killed. It is also with a lambent crystal that this new device is concerned.
Go on.
Ma La gestured to Vicky.
While Tam has proven to be incompetent in some areas, he was able to sneak into Danny Kui's laboratory and gather this information.
She turned to activate the recording creatures on the table behind her. Each in turn began to shine, the light above it showing one of the images Tam Elgren had recorded. Ma La pointed to an image that had been on Danny's screen.
That is a lambent crystal. Rather, it is a diagram of one. According to the information Vicky's agent seized, it is being artificially grown in a laboratory in the depths of their garrison building.
Savang La offered Ma La an expression of revulsion.
So their Jedi will have more lightsabers? We will not allow it. It is worse than that, War Master. The diagram you see represents a lambent crystal as tall as one of our warriors. As tall as... What sort of obscenity could they produce with such a...
And then Savang La knew what they were producing. He found himself standing, shaking in anger, and did not remember rising.
Bring me my father's Villip, he said.
In moments, he stared into the Villip's blurry but recognizable simulation of his father's features. With impatience, Savang La rushed through the customary greetings. Then he got to the subject of his communication.
I now know what their Starlancer project is. It is another accursed superweapon. The coherent light these vehicles project to one another will at some point be focused through a giant lambent crystal being fabricated in the depths of their building. When this happens, the beam will be of sufficient power to destroy a world ship.
Interesting,
his father said.
We cannot allow them to perfect this device, the War Master continued. So I now direct you to commit yourself to an all-out assault on that facility and destroy it immediately.
To do so would be a strategic mistake,
Chulkang La said.
We have not yet gauged our enemy's tactics or resources. His repertoire of surprises is not fully known. It is too early, my son.
My orders stand,
Savang La said. His father's features assumed an expression Savang La well knew. They all but said, "I expected better of you." But Chokang La said nothing aloud, no words that would shame his son. Instead, he said,
"It will be done."
"It has all the characteristics of a major push," Tycho said. He, Wedge, and Diella stood before the control chamber's hologram display. It showed the compiled readouts from all the garrison's ground-based sensors. At the center of the display was the large, friendly signal marked Base. Out at a distance of a few hundred kilometers, in every direction of the compass, were masses of red blips. Diella counted 16 separate groups. "What are they doing?" she asked. "One or two groups are landing personnel, vehicles, everything an invasion force needs," Wedge said. "The others are distractions. We're supposed to divide up our attention among them in a desperate attempt to figure out where their landing zone is, and we're supposed to become nervous because we're not succeeding."
"Supposed to," Yella said.
"Meaning that you're not doing either one?" Wedge shook his head.
"Oh, we're sending out scouts to all these sites, but they're under orders to show up, stay alert, and then make a run for it if anything comes after them. We don't want to lose pilots acquiring information we essentially don't need."
"So you don't care where their landing zone is?"
"It doesn't matter."
"Why?"
"Because sometime in the next day or two, they're going to attack us here. And that's exactly what we want them to do."
"And when they do," Iella said, "who are you going to face them with? The New Republic or the Rebel Alliance?"
Wedge and Tycho exchanged a look, and both grinned.
"Neither," Wedge said. "We're going to face them with an enemy they've never had the displeasure of fighting."
And they told her about Operation Emperor's Hammer.
"You're sure about this?"
Luke gave Lando a skeptical look. Lando nodded, his manner easy.
"I'm sure. Every so often I need to remind the universe that I'm an excellent pilot. With people like you and Han and his daughter around, everyone tends to forget."
They stood in the killing field before the record time, the troop transport that had been part of the first invasion wave to reach the planet's surface.
"Who are you trying to kid?"
Luke gave him a skeptical look.
"You're one of two men who blew up the second Death Star. You don't have anything to prove."
Lando shrugged.
"All right, you've got me. It's about the scam, Luke. People hear about me, they see what I do, and they think I'm all about the profit motive. And sure, I like wealth, but that's secondary. The trick is what makes everything sweet. This is a scam. We're going to take this heap of junk in, and the Yuuzhan Vong are going to think our hopes are pinned on it. They're going to blow it up and think they've wrecked our hopes. They'll be doing exactly what we want them to, and they'll never realize just how much they've helped us. Until we choose to tell them. That's sweeter than any wine, Luke."
"If you say so. Sometimes I think you're as crazy as Han."
Luke checked his chrono. "I'd better get with my team."
Lando and his droid co-pilot, YVH-11A, were on the bridge when Luke's team came up the temporary ramp into the landing bay. It was Luke and Mara, Tahiri Viella, several of the wraiths whom he barely met, the bald one, the tall one, the Deveronian, the skinny bearded man, and the severe-looking woman, and a final surprise, Danny Quee. He shouldn't have been startled. He should have known that the persistent scientist would have insisted on being a part of the mission to find out what was going wrong with Coruscant's terraforming, to learn whatever she could of the Yuuzhan Vong. Lando hit the switch on his comm unit. "Borlaeus Control, this is record time. Ready for takeoff."
"Record time, we'll give you the word. The assault is anticipated within the half hour."
The alarm cut through the biotics building, the temporary docking bays built outside it, the kill zone surrounding it. Pilots scrambled for their starfighters. Jaina,
bracing for the special operations docking bay, skidded to a halt as a large man staggered into her path and turned pleading eyes on her. He was young, not unpleasant-looking, but awkward of posture, with mussed hair and eyes more bloodshot than she'd ever seen in a human, worse than her father or Uncle Lando after the most extravagant night of drinking. "Do you need help?" she asked. The big man shook his head. "I'm going to die." His words were slow, pained. "Then you definitely do need help." She brought out her comlink. All around her, pilots and crew ran into the docking bay and toward vehicles parked in the kill zone. "I'm a Yuuzhan Vong spy, and I'm going to die. I'm supposed to capture you and carry you to the edge of the kill zone, but I'm not going to." "Thank you." Jaina switched on the comlink. "Twin Sun's leader to control. I'm in front of the Special Ops docking bay. I have a male civilian here. He's, experiencing distress and needs medical help right away."
"Acknowledged, Twin Sons."
"I've won." The big man offered her a broad, idiotic smile. Blood suddenly began pouring down from his nose. "I don't have to do what they say. All they can do is kill me."
"Of course."
She edged around him. Whatever his situation, she had to get to her X-Wing.
"I took the bug off your X-Wing," he called after her. "So don't worry."
"I won't," she promised, then turned to race after her pilots.
Tam watched her go. He knew she hadn't believed him. Everyone had seen shell-shocked refugees here after Coruscant's fall. He must look just like one of them. Suddenly, he was looking at the sky. He hadn't felt the impact of falling. He shrugged and put the data card on his chest, where it was sure to be found. Then the sky was full of faces, men and women saying things he couldn't understand. He smiled at them to reassure them. It was important they understand that he didn't blame them, that he wasn't mad. He was still trying to form the words to tell them this when unconsciousness claimed him.
"All special ops squadrons have launched," Yella called out above the clamor of the command chamber. "We have contact," Tycho said. "Yuuzhan Vong capital ships nearing Borlaeus, far side of the planet." Yella said, "Commander Davip is requesting permission to pull Lusankia out of Geosync to engage the enemy before they reach our location."
Wedge smiled at her.
"Of course he is. Tell him no.
Transmit to him the details of Operation Emperor's Hammer."
"Got it?"
"Done."
Twin Sun's squadron took up position a few kilometers north of the Biotics building, high enough that Yuuzhan Vong attacks fired from the ground would have to travel for several obvious seconds before reaching them. The Wild Knights were arrayed to the east, Black Moon Squadron to the west, and the Rogues to the south. Other squadrons from the Star Destroyers overhead were arriving to fill in the broad gaps in that defensive circle. Jaina's and Kip's X-Wings crept along just above the jungle floor. They were perpendicular to the ground, their repulsor lifts whining with the unaccustomed demands of having to fly sideways just above a planetary surface. The snub fighter's bows crashed through branches and fern-like vegetation as they moved. Not exactly stealthy, Jaina decided, but still invisible from the air. Jag's claw craft was not in sight. Sensors said that he was about 200 meters ahead and slowly increasing his lead. And with Jag's fighter, hovering behind it at a distance of no more than 4 meters, were two dark bombs, armed, drifting along in the grip of the Force. Jaina sweated as she divided her concentration between flying this way and controlling her dark bomb. Jag said,
"I've managed to set down in some heavy growth just beside a riverbank. A sort of hunter's blind. I have pretty good visibility. If you want, you can set the bombs down behind me. Gently."
Jaina did so, grateful for the relief.
"How close do you think you are?"
"Pretty close. I'm looking right at them. About 20 meters off, ahead to starboard. There are two masses of reptoid slaves escorting coral skippers. see only 5 skips, but their formation suggests a broad line of them. Hold on.
He was silent for a few moments.
Vibrations in the hull suggest that one or more ranges are headed this way. I think we've placed it pretty accurately. Wait a second.
What is it?
I see a range moving this way. Who wants to try this one? I do,
Kip said.
All right, lift the dark bomb up, traverse it 10 meters forward, and lower it slowly. I see the bomb. Very good. All right, take it ahead dead slow. A little to the right. No, not that much to the right. Stop. This will never work,
Kip said.
I can't sense all the vegetation with the accuracy of seeing it. I can't just steer around things.
Yes, you can, Jaina said. Can you direct its movements through hand motions?
Well, yes, but it's no better if I still can't see it.
Jaina grinned. Kip, set down here and slave your controls to Jag's.
All right, done. Now what?
Jag, you use your control yoke like it was a joystick in a game. Direct the dark bomb's movement. Kip, keep your hand on your yoke, let its feedback direct where your hand goes, and control the dark bomb through your hand motions.
Whoa.
Kip sounded impressed.
All right, I'm game. Nice of you to be so willing,
Jag said.
You're not the one sitting meters away from an armed proton torpedo being directed by a blind man in a two-way hookup. Well, here goes.
Jaina set down her X-wing and crossed her fingers.
Hey, it's working,
Jag said.
My control is sloppy, but much better than verbal. Good, Kip. You're getting better. Stop it here. Set it down. Good. It's right in the path of the range. And there's another one behind it, a little to port.
Go ahead and take the second bomb, Jaina told Kip. Jag said,
I estimate about 10 seconds before the Yuuzhan Vong figure out I'm here.
Get out of there, then. Come back to us.
No, it's more than 10 seconds before the ranges are in position. We need to time this exactly.
No, come on back now. Jag activated his shields, heard and felt the increased engine demand thrum through his claw craft. He rolled his craft over backward like a ball, rotating it along its directional axis, so he ended up facing the other way but right side up, and goosed his thrusters. Behind him, his hiding place exploded as plasma cannon ejecta rained down on it. Then the trees surrounding it shattered, splintering, as coral skippers gave chase. Jaina let herself drift, staying in tentative contact with the distant life forms. She could feel them, the collective them, insects, lizards, other life forms native to Borlaeus. She was sure she was feeling their fear as the impact tremor of the range's giant feet shook the ground around them. She could also feel, with a different set of force sensibilities, the dark bomb she controlled. The two sets of feeling were coming closer together. She felt a twitch from Kip. His range was right over his dark bomb. Wait, she told him. Closer, closer, and then they were almost together. Now, she told him, and triggered her dark bomb. She opened her eyes. In the distance, fire erupted into the sky. Fire, propelling into the sky tons of charred flesh that had been ranges. All right, twins, she said. Let's go back in and deal with that last range and Jag's pursuit.
Twin sons, this is Control.
In fact, it was Wedge's voice.
Negative on that. Fall back. Fall back.
Fall back. Understood. Jaina struggled with herself, then assumed her most regal tone. We want to know why we're being summoned back when we're winning.
Because you're holding up the Yuuzhan Vong advance.
She lost her godly demeanor.
What? I thought that's what we were supposed to do.
Wedge laughed at her.
Goddess, as usual, you're doing your job too well.
The record time dropped out of hyperspace close to Coruscant. Lando immediately began broadcasting. Survivor Cell 38, this is Rescue 2. We're inbound and ready for pickup. Over. There was no reply. Of course there wasn't. There was no Survivor Cell 38. No one was monitoring this comm frequency.
Sensors show frigate analog incoming,
YVH-11A said. Shields up. Commence firing. Lando plotted a course revision that would carry them away from the Yuuzhan Vong command ships in the area, a course that would, in theory, get them to the vicinity of the edge of Coruscant's atmosphere. He ran the numbers and winced. The incoming frigate would be on them before they could get into position. Record time was going to soak up some damage. He keyed the comm unit again. Survivor Cell 38, this is Rescue 2. Why don't you answer? Why don't you answer? He clicked it off and grinned at 11A. What did you think of that? 11A began firing, meticulous shots with the ship's turbo lasers at too great a distance to be effective.
Stress analysis of your transmitted words suggests high emotional content. From a search and rescue perspective, you sound like an emotional civilian.
Good. How about the repetition? Too cliched, or did it work for you?
That is outside the scope of my programming.
11A continued firing.
The frigate is launching coral skippers. I have destroyed one.
I suggest you destroy all of them. Luke waited in the darkness of the cargo hold. Strapped to his feet was the descent unit the Wraiths had given him. He wore a set of Yuuzhan Vong-styled armor, not one of the true Vonduan crab sets, one of the artful simulations. Over the Yuuzhan Vong armor, he wore an environment suit, a big, bulky, ancient one no one would miss when he had to shred it upon landing. He reached out to Mara, felt her in the Force, felt her living presence. She reached back. Lando's voice came over his helmet speakers.
We're getting into range.
The ship and everything in the cargo area shuddered.
Sorry about that. Little bit of plasma goo.
Lando pulled a pilot's helmet on. His fancy tunic and cloak concealed a far more ordinary pilot's jumpsuit, and he checked its connections to make sure it was ready to seal him off in case of pressure loss. A piece of plasma had already burned its way through the transparasteel of the forward viewport, and air was hissing out through it. The record time shook every few seconds now, but they were almost in position. Lando keyed his helmet microphone. Coming up on launch zone in 15 seconds. There's not going to be a countdown. When we're there, I'm going to punch you out.
Force be with you, Lando.
Luck be with you, Luke. Lando switched off the comlink and returned his attention to the controls. This was tricky. He put the ungainly, disintegrating freighter into a slow port turn, bringing its starboard side around to face the sunny side of the planet below. Ready yourself, 11A. Then he tripped the newly installed switch labeled Go. The ship's inertial compensator kicked off. All around the forward section of the ship, explosives attached to the outer hull would be going off. They weren't high explosives. They had just enough detonating power to fire chaff and thick smoky residue out in all directions. From outside, it would look as though record time were experiencing a series of internal explosions. The smoke and chaff concealed the starboard cargo bay door, which should have been slung open by the maneuver. Lando saw that its gauge registered that it was open, that its atmospheric pressure was approaching zero. He looked out the starboard viewport. There, a cloud of debris was tumbling away from the freighter, directly toward Coruscant's surface, far below. He keyed his helmet microphone again. Survivor Cell 38, this is the final transmission of Rescue 2. Sorry we couldn't get to you. Hope you have better luck next time. That message, he knew, would be picked up by a New Republic scout ship at the edge of the Coruscant system and relayed to Wedge Antilles. It meant that Luke and his party were safely away. He turned to 11A.
All right, let's get... A blast of plasma from the frigate analog hit the center of the record time. The ripple from the impact shook the length of the ship. Lando's chair post broke loose, bouncing him, still strapped into his chair, into the air. The ship's artificial gravity was dead, so he rose until he banged into the bridge ceiling, bounced off, and began drifting toward the fist-sized hole in the forward viewport. "Oh, I have a really good feeling about this," he said. Luke felt abrupt weightlessness, then sudden acceleration as he was punched out of the cargo bay and, he hoped, toward the planet. All of his comrades were with him still. As he watched, the inertial compensator in the unit at his feet activated, rotating him so that he approached Coruscant feet first. Minor repulsor bursts would be keeping him in close proximity to the others. He shook his head, dissatisfied. He didn't like to be in any small vehicle when he wasn't at the controls. And this was a vehicle only by a very generous broadening of the definition of that word. Lando got himself unstrapped from his chair and kicked against the viewport. The move carried him away from it, but it also caused cracks to appear where his heel had struck. Cracks that reached the plasma hole and radiated in other directions as well. 11A pushed himself free from his seat, a trajectory that carried him past Lando and toward the door out. He caught Lando around the waist as he traveled, Lando's mass barely causing a change in his direction, and reached the door recess. He clamped his feet down at the bottom of the recess and, with his free hand, sheared through the metal door. Atmosphere behind it poured through, tugging Lando, but 11A merely shoved his way through the ruins of the door and into the passageway beyond. "Good work," Lando said. "Now can you get us into the bay?" 11A kicked again, and they were floating weightless down the passageway. Luke could feel the heat now. For all the Wraith's claims, heat soaked into the descent unit was transmitted into the pod, cutting through his environment suit, through his armor, causing him to burst into sweat from scalp to toes. The pod rocked. Luke knew that friction had to have caused a pit in the bottom of his pod. Atmosphere was getting a foothold in the pit, causing greater friction, causing the whole unit to sway. He felt a rumble in his feet as the repulsor lift there increased power output to keep the unit upright. Abruptly, there was a bright flash, and the top of the pod was gone. Luke found himself in a column of fire, streaming yellow flames that reached from the edges of the descent unit at his feet straight up into the air. He could see nothing beyond it. "This is bad for me," he thought. "What is it going to be like for Tahiri, the teenager?" Luke felt a jolt under his feet, sudden deceleration. His knees flexed as he absorbed the shock. The deceleration remained constant, and the flames began to diminish, waver. In moments, he could see his surroundings through them. Mara was no more than 10 meters away. The others were all nearby. They were less than 2 kilometers above the world's surface, still falling, but not at terminal velocity. And though he'd lived on Coruscant for many years, this wasn't the surface he remembered. Great buildings lay toppled, their angles no longer conforming to those of the structures around them. Everything was coated with green, a poisonous shade of the color.
"Interesting ride, farm boy."
Luke repressed a snicker. "Not too bad."
"Face?"
That was Tahiri's voice, faint, full of emotion. Luke winced. He and Mara would need to offer her some reassurance.
"Yes?" "I want one. I've got to have one of these when we get back. Oh, what a ride. Can we do it again?"
Luke shook his head and felt Mara laughing at him. One 11A had to use his blaster on the main door into the cargo bay. Once it was shredded and gone, the atmosphere from the passageway nearly blew the two of them into the bay itself, but the combat droid held fast. Lando poked his head in.
His escape B-wing seemed to be secure. The cargo ramp door was still down, maybe gone, and he could see starry space beyond. Space, and as the remains of the ship rotated, a coral skipper still pouring fire into its side as the ruins descended toward the atmosphere. Cold began seeping into Lando's bones. Let's go. A minute later, just as the outer edges of the record time began glowing from friction, Lando's B-wing erupted from the cargo bay, turning away from the pursuing coral skipper. With 11A silent in the passenger seat, Lando plotted a course that would carry them out of Coruscant's mass shadow to a point where he could make a jump, any jump, to hyperspace, get clear. He turned to look at the combat droid. "And I did it looking good," he said. The biotics facility was in clear sight now. Jaina could see a Yuuzhan Vong frigate analog a dozen kilometers away in the zone defended by Rogue Squadron. The frigate blossomed in fire and blood as a proton torpedo found its mark. But there were more frigate analogs, other capital ships, all converging on the biotics facility. She shook her head. The Yuuzhan Vong force marching toward the facility was too great. The defenders could not hold the site. Until now, she'd been silently raging at Wedge Antilles. Whenever she'd managed to make inroads against the enemy assault, he or one of his controllers would order her to withdraw. It was as if they didn't want her to win. But now she could see that too much success on her part would serve only to cut Twin Suns off from the other units, to doom her and her pilots. It was probably best that she'd been ordered to fall back at the same rate as the other squadrons. The mind of Jaina the Goddess woke up. Jaina frowned. Fall back at the same rate? She consulted her sensor display. That was exactly what was happening. The New Republic forces had withdrawn where they were too strong and been reinforced where they were too weak. And now every live unit of those forces was within a kilometer of the kill zone. "Jag, I need to apologize to your uncle," she said.
"Why?"
"I'll tell you later."
"All units, fall back to kill zone,"
Yella said.
"All units, fall back to kill zone. You have 15 seconds. 14. 13.
Jaina led her squad back, taking up position directly over the landing zone in front of the biotics building, directing their lasers back the way they'd come.
"Zero,"
Yella said.
"Hold positions."
And it began to rain. It didn't rain water. It rained columns of destructive energy. Massed fire from turbo laser batteries far overhead. Brilliant needles of light that poured into the jungle all around the kill zone. The turbo laser blasts tore through vegetation, through everything beneath it. Beams flashed down through those clouds. But the manipulators of voids couldn't see them coming, couldn't maneuver the voids into place in time. Jaina sat transfixed. This was orbital bombardment, what the Empire Star Destroyers had been built to do, what no Star Destroyer under the command of the New Republic had ever done. And now she was seeing it. Lusankya was finally fulfilling the purpose for which she had been built, before Jaina had even been born. For long minutes, death rained down from overhead, in a circle neatly surrounding the kill zone. Then it stopped, and the rumbles, the screams uttered by bodies of water suddenly superheated, the bellows of distant ranges meeting their doom, all died away. Jaina jumped as her comlink crackled back into life.
"Ground forces,"
Wedge said.
"Commence mop-up."
The repulsors on the descent units activated for the final portion of the descent. All the members of Luke's group sat down on the same roof. Luke pulled off his scorched environment suit as the others did the same. He took a look around. In the distance, he could see a flight of four coral skippers. They were not aimed this way, but if he could see them, their pilots might be able to see him. "Let's get under cover," he said. Mara, somehow stylishly savage in her Vonduan crab armor with its helmet off, surveyed the landscape. Her lips twitched in a momentary grimace. "Welcome home," she said. Chulkang La blinked. How had that particular use of the infidel's triangle ships eluded him? Noma Noor, he decided. Noma Noor had been the Yuuzhan Vong spy in this galaxy for decades. Like an idiot, during all those years, he had failed to discover that humans gave birth to twins so often that it was a matter of little interest to them, and this failure had cost them dearly. It had allowed the notion of Jason and Jaina Solo as sacred twins to become a weapon in the hands of the infidels. Now, it seemed obvious that Noma Noor had failed to inform the Yuuzhan Vong military command of a little-used but critical tactic employed by the enemy's senior capital ships. Unforgivable. "Recall the ships and coral skippers harassing their orbital forces," he told his aide. "This engagement is done." He turned away. He would have to give his son unpleasant news. As night fell, Jaina finished her power-down checklist. She exited her X-Wing and turned toward the docking bay exit. But waiting for her, as he usually did now, was Jag. He wore the slight smile Jaina suspected that only she could see. "What's up?" she said. "Calrissian got back from Coruscant alive. So, being Calrissian, he's throwing a party for family and friends. And friends of friends, and anyone who looks interesting. He says he has pre-invasion brandy. Care to go?" Jaina felt herself start to shake her head, the refusal that had become second nature to her since she'd come to Borlaeus. But she caught herself in time. She linked her arm through his and smiled up at him. "Love to." This is Alexander Adams. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Enemy Lines, Book One, Rebel Dream by Aaron Alston. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Charles Potter. Executive producer, Orly Moskowitz. Abridgment by David Smith. Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Enemy Lines, Book One, Rebel Dream, is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2002. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production, copyright 2002, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House Audio presentation. All rights reserved.